Welcome to Let's Talk Death, conversations to inform and inspire. Let's Talk Death is being brought to you by Heal Grief, a nonprofit providing the tools and resources to support one's journey with grief. We seek to empower individuals to achieve a healthy post-bereavement growth. Everything we do is inspired by our core belief that no one should ever grieve alone. Let's Talk Death is a series of conversations with some amazing people from various fields. Our goal through these conversations is to normalize, educate, and demystify the taboo around death, dying, and the journey of grief. Hello, welcome to this episode of Let's Talk Death. I'm Fran Solomon, your host for this episode. Our guest today is Tracy Chang. Tracy is a licensed psychotherapist in private practice in Los Angeles who works with individuals throughout California. She specializes in working with high-achieving adults who are navigating personal and professional existential challenges. In addition, she supports individuals grieving a death loss and those coping with life changes and transitions. Tracy has had specialized training and experience working with grief and loss and is passionate about empowering people to grieve honestly. As a strengths-based therapist, Tracy blends her clinical knowledge with meaning-based exploration to help clients expand their awareness, boldly reimagine the status quo, and live in alignment with their true selves. Tracy earned her BA in psychology from Mount St. Mary's University and MA in clinical psychology from Pepperdine University. For over 10 years, she's been in practice, working with inpatient and outpatient settings with clients of diverse backgrounds and ages. In addition, she is a clinical supervisor who provides supervision to the associate therapists in California and private consultation to professionals and companies worldwide. Tracy, I am delighted to have you as a guest on our show.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Of course. So my first question, I'm curious, why did grief and loss become a specialty for you?
Yeah, so the simple answer is it just felt right. There were different clues on my journey that brought me to a place where I was able to get training in that area. But the reason I love working with grief and loss is because my actual personality loves deep, meaningful conversation. I love the gritty, I'm someone that doesn't mind having the vulnerable conversations that, you know, some people might fear. And so I really enjoy going deep and wide, you know, in social engagement. And so it made a lot of sense to me that grief would resonate with the fabric of who I am, just because I just love the realness of it. And the more training I got in the area, I realized the more that I wanted to specialize in it.
Yeah, interesting. You know, we've worked with professionals in the field, and one of the things that we have discovered through their work is that when you dive deep into someone's anxiety or trauma or just hitting a brick wall in their life, mm-hmm. it's usually due to a traumatic event. And if you dive even further, you tell me if your conclusions are the same, it's usually as a result of a death loss, which is really mm-hmm. a life-altering event. And, mm-hmm. and we're kind of taught in society that with time, you'll get over it and you'll move on and you'll forget and all those things.
Yeah.
But how many years later, this unsupported grief just surfaces with a roadblock.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Certainly. And actually, what's interesting to me is when I started to specialize in grief and loss, I thought that I would have, you know, the high achieving adults that were going to come see me for a certain set of, you know, concerns. And then I thought I would have grieving adults coming to see me specifically for about their grief. But what I anticipated didn't end up happening at all. What ended up happening was people would come into my practice and the grief would never be at the forefront of why they were coming here. And, you know, through a process of questioning, you know, grief would start bubbling up to the surface. And so they would spend, you know, time talking about, you know, the presenting concerns that they have. And they would be like, oh, by the way, you know, the person that, you know, was my parental figure died of this terminal illness. And I'm like, oh, wow, you know, and so there's this opportunity for me to highlight the grief that they may be experiencing. And a lot of times, I get this look of confused curiosity, because they start sharing that they don't feel like they've actually processed their grief. And so when I find that I have to do a lot of psychoeducation around what grief looks like and feels like. So there's a lot of intentional work that clients end up doing through the process of kind of sharing in their experiences.
Yeah, it was, so I'll share a little personal experience with you and our audience. So my dad died in 98 and my daughter was born in 2002. And this beautiful life that entered mine brought me so much sadness. Mm-hmm. And I had a girlfriend that was sitting with me and hearing all the reasons why I was just so sad. I couldn't sleep and this and that. And the list went on and on. And then it was, and my father's not here to see his granddaughter. Mm-hmm. Bingo. Mm-hmm, that's mm-hmm. where my sadness was. Mm-hmm. The good news, I had someone who was able to make that connection for me. Otherwise, I'm curious, and maybe this is something you can share if it's also been some experience that you've encountered. Mm-hmm. Had I not been able to make that association early on, I might have had a very different relationship with my daughter, thinking that she brought me this sadness. And 19 years later, it could be very different with displaced grief.
Sure. Yeah. Displaced grief is a real thing. And I think most people don't understand that if you don't answer the door when grief knocks in the moment, it will just end up knocking harder. and until you answer. And oftentimes, you know, because there's just been such a lack of information about the grief experience, people just don't know how to be intentional about their grief. And so I use this metaphor that, you know, there's I use a lot of metaphors to illustrate grief in my practice. And one of the metaphors I use is this compounding interest metaphor. So, you know, as you know, interest can accrue on a credit card if you don't pay off the balance every month. And so eventually you will have to pay off the balance and all of that interest. And that's a lot like how grief works. So if you are not intentional about paying attention to your grief in the moment, then it will come out and manifest in other ways. And sometimes it's not so pleasant. And, you know, I sometimes say that, you know, anger can sometimes be a accumulation of unaddressed emotions. So it misplaced grief. It will,
would you consider that? Would you consider that to be the unspoken grief of a high achiever?
Yeah. So I work a lot with you know, grief related to the death of a loved one, but I also work a lot with disenfranchised grief. And, you know, for those in the audience that aren't familiar with disenfranchised grief, it's a lot about the grief that isn't as widely recognized in society, that isn't as acknowledged as, you know, like a death loss. And so when it comes to the high achievers that high achieving, those who identify as high achieving adults, what I've learned is that there are so many untold grief stories that a high achiever is just sitting on. And, you know, through my work with clients, I've discovered that there is a lot of unresolved grief that sometimes they take on an achievement orientation, believing that they can somehow compensate for the feelings of not enoughness or internalized shame, you know, they internalize messages about not being good enough. Even when they've experienced perhaps a death of a loved one at a younger age, they will internalize that as if it was their fault. And that dichotomy can really break a young mind. And so they, you know, hold that until they're older and they realize that they are getting attention for the things that they're doing and so they don't allow themselves to be, because they get attention and validation and love for doing things, you know, from other people. So they become very externally focused on validation. And so in my work with clients, it's a lot of processing through the grief of conflicting identities, you know, between who they truly are and who they think they should be or who they expect themselves to be. And there is usually a very deep-seated grief that's, you know, that they're multitasking between when it comes to those two identities.
Let's Talk Death is being brought to you by Heal Grief, a 501c3. As a nonprofit, we are reliant on the kind generosity of our donors. If you are inspired by our mission, we ask you to go to healgrief.org/donations to help us continue our great work. No gift is too small.
So I want to take a phrase out of your bio, and I'd like to know what you mean by that, both with bereaved and both with general grief. You say empowering people to grieve honestly. Would that be kind of what you're talking about?
Yeah, grieving honestly. Grieving honestly just means allowing yourself to be vulnerable, you know, which is really not encouraged much. And it's a really new concept for people that, you know, it's important to feel your emotions and accept what you're feeling in the moment. So, you know, grieving honestly is just being honest with yourself about how you're feeling, you know, not labeling emotions as good and bad, but, you know, experiencing them without judgment. Because essentially what you're doing is when you're grieving honestly is if you're feeling sad, then you're by being honest with yourself, you're saying that you are sad. But if you shame yourself by saying that you aren't sad, then you're basically pushing away like a part of your identity, you know, what you're feeling. I mean, you are not the emotion, but the truth is you're feeling it in the moment. And so it can be kind of, there is an ease to just experiencing emotions without judgment. And, you know, one of my mottos is that honesty is the best filter for life. And so if you allow yourself to be vulnerable with yourself and others, you can figure out pretty quickly where you feel safe and what makes you feel good, you know, how to find healing. Like all those answers can come to the surface when you allow yourself to be honest.
Yeah, culturally, that's very difficult to do because especially with grief, again, one is expected to get over it. Like there's a timeline. And so how 6 months, a year later, an anniversary, a family event, do you allow yourself to feel that sadness? And maybe through the great work that you're doing, a client can feel in that moment. But then there's the exterior, you know, environment that, you know, well, what are they going to think? Yep. And their expectations on what our timeline should be and how we should be behaving 6 months, a year later. Mm-hmm. So does that ever come up in therapy? Like, well, what do I do when everybody else thinks I'm crazy?
All the time. I mean, people are, the social acceptability of allowing yourself to be vulnerable. A lot of people have this idea that it's like not socially acceptable to be crying and showing your emotions.
Be tough.
Be strong. Yeah. But that is strength, is vulnerability, being the courage to be honest with yourself and others, to have an authentic relationship with yourself and others is just super important. And, you know, a lot of the work that I do with clients around grief is honoring who you are and how you want to do things. Because, you know, oftentimes we look to our environment for clues on how we should do things, but then we don't stop to question, well, do I really want to do it that way? Or am I telling myself I should do it that way? Because apparently I work for that person, or this is how my family, you know, dealt with it. And they don't stop to question, does that even resonate with me? Like that way of coping, like it doesn't even resonate with me. And so a lot of the work that I do is just helping clients define what that looks like for themselves and kind of compartmentalizing, okay, you know, this is what's done and this is what's happened and what you've experienced in your culture, in your family, amongst your friends, at work. But what do you want to do? You know, how do you want to move forward in your grief? Like, let's paint a portrait together, you know, on what you'd like this to start looking like. And again, you know, my clients will, it takes a bit of integration for it to sink in, like, oh, like there's such a thing as processing grief. Like there's some work that I can do here and so they don't, it's a novel experience to them sometimes. They've never had a very focused conversation about their grief. And so I feel like it's really important to hold that space for someone. And my one of my values is honesty. I think it's really, I think it just, it can bring so much clarity.
You know, we had a young lady that came to us and she was 6 months into her grief journey, and her siblings and her surviving parent were almost shaming her. Like, why is she still grieving? Why isn't she getting on with her life?
Right.
Why can't she be strong like everyone else? And, you know, it was really a breakthrough moment for her when we suggested that, just as you said, confronting your grief mm-hmm. really is being strong. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of strength and courage in that. It's not easy. It's sometimes even easy to just keep shoving it away and making yourself really busy and being that high achiever. But there's a lot of strength and courage confronting it.
Yes, there is.
So, yeah, we're in tremendous alignment there. So how do you do a grief assessment? What are the common themes you hear?
Yeah, so because people oftentimes don't perceive grief to go beyond the realm of the death of a loved one. In order for me to cast the widest net possible to capture all kinds of grief in the grief sea, is really to not use that word in my initial assessment. So what I'll do is I'll ask them a question like, you know, what are the significant events or relationships that you've had that you think that I should know about in order to help you? And of course, you know, naturally they may share about all kinds of, you know, stressful situations that they've had to encounter. You know, death of a loved one will come up, but they oftentimes share it in a very much like a matter of fact kind of way. Like they just kind of sweep past it. But they'll also, you know, share about the loss of financial stability, mm-hmm. challenges with fertility. You know, there's a lot of like, you know, I didn't get this job, so I had to move over here, or, you know, who I loved didn't love me back. You know, so the phrasing the question without the grief word specifically allows us to kind of capture all that first in the assessment. And then from there, I will work with them to kind of figure out like how they've coped with those events, if they're aware of what their reactions to that experience are, and just kind of assess how much awareness they have around having experienced those losses. And oftentimes I do get the look of confused curiosity when I start providing a lot of re-education about grief, because sometimes they'll be like, oh, I never thought about it that way, that could be grief, or oh, I never did anything intentional around, you know, my mother, father's or sister's death. They'll talk about the grief, the stages of death and dying, you know, the infamous stages of death and dying. The Elizabeth Kubler-Ross model. And so I had to take the opportunity to share with them, you know, Dr. William Warden's model of grief, which, you know, overall just seems to be, you know, when people find out about that model and I share it with them, people seem to resonate with it more, you know, across the lifespan, across all cultures, it seems to fit well.
Because it's probably what they've been holding on to. and the release of it. You know, there's something, we're going to have to wrap up soon, but there's something called continuing bonds. And how so many years later might you, if you even do, introduce that theory?
Mm-hmm. Continuing bonds.
Yeah, so continuing the relationship with the person that is no longer with us.
Yeah, I mean, it starts with the idea that, you know, when a person dies, like your relationship with them does not die. You know, your love for them does not end. Love goes on forever. And so when someone is ready to start, you know, I talk about the process of grief as like, it's more like adapting to change. It's not about getting over it. It's going through it. It's adapting to change. It's integrating, integration. And so, you know, when someone feels ready to revisit possibly the parts of their grief that felt too painful to initially look at, like, that have to do with their loved one. You know, perhaps it's going through their belongings or looking at pictures again or going to places that they love to go to with their loved one. You know, these are all challenges that are, you know, a lot of people engage in a lot of avoidance with. Mm-hmm. But the act of, you know, when they're able to define the act of continuing bonds as like honoring their relationship with their loved one, honoring their loved one for who they were, and celebrating the fact that they lived and that they were in their life. Because I think as a society, we've defined, you know, there's all this hoopla about birthdays, and it's like every birthday is like such a big deal. But then when it comes to death, which is so significant, I mean, you're talking about a person that has lived a life, and, you know, whenever they, you know, it should be given just as much attention.
Yeah.
And it's just not. And so, you know, it's a lot of the work is about, you know, helping someone figure out how they want to honor that relationship in the way that feels right for them, as well as taking into consideration, you know, what culture they come from and like how much of that culture that they want to kind of integrate into how they want to honor that relationship. So yeah, the continuing bonds is very important, but I think people just have a difficult time figuring out like how to do that, you know. And
when we have people come to us just saying, you know, when do I get over this? You know, the answer that I generally give is that this thing called grief just became your lifelong companion.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now the question is, after we accept that this is now a lifelong companion, how do we actively move forward with that companion by our side?
Yes.
You know, it kind of just changes the, so I'm not going to get over it, but I can figure it out.
Yes, just exploring, discovering their resilience and having
a new relationship. You
know?
Relationship. Yeah.
Grief is a byproduct of love. It's evidence to show that you loved someone, and it's beautiful. It really is.
Totally agree. Tracy, I want to thank you so much. We only have a few minutes left. Can you tell those in our audience who might want to reach out to you for professional services how they might be able to do so?
Yes. So I have a website. It's www.tracychanglmft.com, and it's TracyChangLmft.com. And on my website, my phone number and email are listed, as well as the ability to, you know, schedule a consultation online if they wish to do that.
Wonderful. And we'll also have those links up on our YouTube and on our website. So again, thank you for being a guest here at Let's Talk Death and for sharing your work. If you would like to learn more about Heal Grief, visit us at healgrief.org. To find other conversations or to inquire about becoming a guest speaker, visit us at healgrief.org/letstalkdeath. And if you feel inspired to support us, remember, no gift is too small. Visit us at healgrief.org/donations, or you can donate right through our homepage. Well, that's it until next time on Let's Talk Death, where we normalize, educate, and demystify the taboo around death, dying, and the journey of grief.